WMFO, Medford.
Previously on the Grand Hour.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program of organ music to bring you a special news flash from our affiliated press service. New York, December 12th, 1937. The shadow has been found. Dr. James Evans, world-famous child surgeon, told reporters this afternoon that a wounded man...
Hello? Dr. Evans speaking.
Dr. Evans. The man you claim to have operated upon was a fake. The real shadow has not been wounded.
The shadow? You are the shadow?
Yes, Dr. Evans. You don't seem surprised.
I'm not. I've been hoping you'd get in touch with me. That statement I issued was false.
False?
There was a very grave reason. I need your help. An old acquaintance of mine, Raymond Dubril, the financier, has received a death threat.
I wonder if this is just a wild goose chase. Lamarck couldn't be way out here, not if he's wounded, dying. That car, it sounded like... Oh, but it couldn't be. It is. It's Lamarck. Lamarck.
What in heaven's name are you doing here?
Oh, Lamarck, then it wasn't true. You weren't shot. Dr. Evans didn't operate on you.
Oh, so you heard that news flash, too.
The papers are full of it. I tried to find you out the office, at home, at your club, everywhere.
I'm sorry, Margot. I should have known you'd worry, but I've had a very busy afternoon. Dr. Evans did that, knowing I'd get in touch with him. He needs my help in a very special manner.
But why? Is someone after him, threatening him?
Yes, also the owner of this estate, the banker Dubril and Martin, the concert pianist.
And you're going to help them?
I'm interested in helping Evans. He's a great doctor and a great humanitarian. His life...
There's a man, Dubril, the shadow. He might save you from Covey.
What could he do? I've had the best private detective in the country trying to find some trace of Covey ever since he escaped from Devil's Island again 6 months ago.
By the way, Dubril, I've always wondered who tipped off the police when Covey was hiding. And also, who betrayed me, Dubril, the time I tried to escape alone the first time.
Martin, Dubril, now listen to me. A moment ago, we were talking about the shadow. Well, he isn't dying. I didn't operate on him. I announced that, hoping the real shadow would get in touch with me.
And did he?
Yes.
Allow me to convince him, Dr. Evans.
What was that? Who spoke then?
I understand there is little time to lose. I must know the whole story. The truth, if I am to help you. They first threaten your lives.
It was the last day we spent in the open boat in which we escaped from Devil's Island, 20 years ago.
Killing me! You only brought me along to steer the boat, and now you're starving me to death? You don't want me to live, but I will live! I'll get you for this! I'll live to kill every one of you for this! You, Dubril! You, Martin! You, Evans!
Oh, shut him up, Evans! You're a doctor, you know what to do!
What makes you so sure... It is Covey.
Well, it couldn't be anyone else. It's Covey, all right. He said you reel that thing on the table.
That oblong box?
Yes, Shadow. For one thing, Shadow. When the lid of the coffin is raised, it's a music box. And that tune it's playing was the warning signal we used while planning our escape from Devil's Island.
Remember, only the four of us knew it. You reel, Covey, Evans, and myself.
Oh, stop! I'll pour it myself. Oh, that tune! Where is it coming from? I smashed the coffin.
Good heavens, Dubril! It's the decanter in your hands.
Someone changed the decanter. Covey! He did it! He's here! He's been in his house tonight!
Dubril, where are you going?
To my room! I don't trust anybody! I'd be safe there behind locked doors, alone! And if Covey comes, I'll be ready for
him! Wait, Dubril, wait!
Let him go, Dr. Evans.
But he shouldn't be left alone! Covey may carry out his threat.
Are you sure it is, Covey?
What do you mean? It must be. It couldn't be anyone else. The coffin, the decanters, are his warning.
I know. But you said the four of you knew the signal. Are you sure it isn't one of you?
Of course not. I thought you said the shadow was here to help
him. I am. But I am content to let events lead themselves to a logical conclusion.
You mean... You won't use your power to save us from him?
I shall use my power at the moment it is required, Dr. Evans. Right now, for instance. Look on the table.
Huh?
There is a note where the decanter was standing.
Good heavens! Covey has been here. Listen to this, Master. You are the first. And you will die tonight, Raymond Dubreuil.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Shadow will return in a moment. There are thousands.
Unlike milk, long distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Again, experiencing some technical difficulties here with the turntables. It doesn't appear to want to be playing, which is going to interfere with the end of my show. So, you're listening to the Death Triangle. Original air date was the 12th of December, 1937. Again, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston in The Shadow, and Agnes Moorehead as Margot Lane. I was going to honor some requests that I've received for the Grand Hour Fan Club. However, I got to figure out how to get this turntable back and running. But here we go back with The Shadow.
Dubreuil, wake up. I have come for you.
So you've come, Covey. Oh, you poor deluded fool. Do you think I'd let you kill me in my sleep? I've been awake, waiting here in the dark for you to come. A little light helps. So you've grown a beard since I saw you last, Covey. And your hair is gray.
That gun in your hand won't save you, Dubreuil. If I die, I will take you with me.
Listen, Covey. I didn't steal your food in the open vault. I swear it.
No? You also betrayed me to the police. You told them where to find me. And I am not the only one you betrayed, am I, Dubreuil? You betrayed Martin the time he tried to escape alone, didn't you, Dubreuil?
Yes, yes, but what do you care, Covey? He wouldn't take me with him. But I did not betray you.
Have you paid Martin for those 100 lashes and those 100 days of bread and water he got because you betrayed him?
Oh, he doesn't know. He will never know it was I.
Dubreuil, you remember how we passed the long days in that open boat, throwing knives.
Don't raise that knife, Covey.
We got so good, we seldom missed.
I'll shoot if you move.
But Martin was the best. You may shoot me, Dubreuil, but my knife won't miss.
Oh, wait a minute, Covey. I will make a deal with you. Listen, Covey. You're out to get Evans and Martin, too. If you throw that knife, I'll shoot you and you will never get them.
Oh, you would help me kill Evans. I know he's here in the house.
Yes, 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 sir. I hate Evans and Martin, too. I will help you get them.
So, you would betray Dr. Evans to save yourself, Dubreuil.
Shadow, Covey, don't be afraid. He's only a man. By some trick, he can make himself invisible, but he's flesh and blood. Quick, lock the door. We'll deal with him first.
He won't get out.
Now, Shadow, what can you do to stop us? Speak up. I dare you to speak.
Listen where his voice comes from, Dubreuil. Then shoot quickly.
No. The shot would bring Evans and Martin. Throw your knife, Covey.
Make him speak. I won't miss.
Speak up, Shadow. We will find you anyway. You can't get out.
I am here in the corner.
In the far corner. Throw your knife, Covey.
I heard him.
You missed.
But he was there.
No. Only my voice was there.
Ventriloquism. He's there in front of you, Dubreuil. Shoot.
Yes, I will shoot now. Yes, I will shoot. But not the Shadow. He came here to help us catch you, Covey. And he has your knife. It's gone. Now, Covey, you are helpless. And now I'll deal with you.
Oh, you treacherous snake. You fool. You think I carry only one knife? This one is for you. Oh, you devil.
But I take you with me, Covey.
Dubreuil is dead, Dr. Evans.
Yes?
Covey's kept his word. Where is he?
Look there, on the floor by the window.
Covey? Is that Covey?
Dubreuil tried to save his life by promising to help that man kill you.
Dubreuil? Dubreuil offered to help Covey kill me?
Look closely, Dr. Evans. Remove the gray wig and the false beard.
Wig? Beard? It's Martin!
Yes. Martin disguised as Covey.
He's still alive, breathing.
Get away from me, Evans. Don't touch me. I'll hate you. I hate you both.
Why did you do this, Pierre? Why?
I hated Dubreuil because he betrayed me on Devil's Island. I hated you, Evans, because you have got the things that I always wanted. Success, fame, glory. It was I sent the musical coffin. The warning note. I knew you'd think it was Covey. I've got Dubreuil, but Covey will get you, Evans. He's after you. He will get you. He will kill you. He will...
Martin! Martin! Stop breathing. He's dead.
Yes, Dr. Evans. He is dead. You are quite safe now.
You forget Covey?
No, Dr. Evans. I knew, even when I phoned you today, that it was not Covey who sent the musical coffin.
What?
I knew it was not Covey. It had to be Martin or Dubreuil.
Why didn't you stop them?
Martin and Dubreuil were both criminals plotting to kill you. If I had stopped them, your life would have been in danger as long as they lived, hating you always for having attained the things that life denied them.
But you forget, Shadow. Covey may find me, succeed where Martin failed.
Never. I learned the whole history of all of you before I saw you.
Yes?
Everything, Dr. Evans. Your escape from Devil's Island after Dubreuil's betrayal of Martin that resulted in the 100 lashes. And his resolve for vengeance. And from the authorities at Devil's Island, I learned the truth about Covey's last escape.
Yes, I see now. I see now why he hated us. But what about Covey?
You are safe now, Dr. Evans. Safe from Covey. The chain of logic is complete. 3 months ago, a bleached skeleton was found on a deserted beach at Trinidad. It has just been identified as the body of Covey.
Before we tell you of the Shadow's next exciting adventure,
okay, I believe I've figured out the turntables here for the time being. And that's the end of the Death Triangle. And its original air date, again, was the 12th of December, 1937. Not much more on that in terms of a writing credit. Director credit. It was not Orson Welles directing. He would begin that later in his career. Just not too much later, just a few years later. He's just simply an actor in this one. Since I got the turntables working, I believe, I can honor the request, well, a request that came through the mailbox for the fan club, the Grand Hour fan club. I'm not going to play that promo because I actually had a flood of, let's say, requests, some of which can be honored, some of which kind of fall outside of the realm of the format of the show here. But sometimes I don't always get to play the end of the Shadow. So we're going to do that for you here today. Usually what originally you had heard about weeding out crime. So right now I'm just playing over the adverts for Blue Coal.
Crime bears bitter fruit. as the six-shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle, unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
It must have been about 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I rode out of the Saucer Mountains and hit the flat, and the Scar stretched his legs and went into a high lope. Seemed real anxious to get across the 8 miles of prairie between the hills and Clay City. Oh, easy, boy. Easy now. Hey, what's your rush? I don't know. Maybe he was hungry. Maybe he was thirsty. Or maybe... Oh, no. No, no. It couldn't be that. Why, it was over 6 months since our last visit at Clay City. Scar couldn't still be remembering the filly from the livery stable. Not after all that time, no. Besides, horses don't have memories, at least not as good as... Now, you just slow down, boy, now, quit. Well, wasn't anything I could do except just keep a tight rein on him, I guess. Something sure was spurring Scar along. Whatever it was important, at least it was to him. Well, we'd covered about half the distance to town when I noticed a couple of dark specks, maybe a mile or so ahead of us. The way they were shaped and the way they were barely moving, well, they just about had to be pack burros. But it wasn't until we almost caught up that I spotted Hiram. And he was beating one of those burros with a cottonwood switch and giving us such a cussing he didn't even hear us riding up toward him.
Oh,
easy, Scar.
Right, you
easy,
no. Canary, you stay covered. I'll set fire to you. And I don't... I'm not fooling. I am warning you. I'll give you such a burning that you won't be able to...
Hiram.
Where'd you come... Britt, for a second there, you kind of startled me.
What?
I didn't know you was on my tail.
The burros been acting up, Hiram?
Oh, they're just being themselves, Britt.
No.
That's the trouble, they're just being themselves.
Yeah, I sure know what you mean.
Where you heading, Clay City?
That's right.
I heard you was riding herd for the Circle G. Last time I was in getting some supplies, you told me. Are you going to town on business?
No. The ranch gave me a day off, tomorrow being 4th of July.
4th of July? Well, I'll be cussing. 4th of July. I've been out in the hills so long I lost all track of time. I didn't even know what month it was. Not for certain. See, you're going to do a little celebrating, eh?
Well, I just thought...
Yeah, come to think of it, I got me something to celebrate, too. And it's more than just Independence Day, Britt. It's a downside, Mark.
Is that so?
Yes. If these critters don't stop balking, it'll be Christmas before we ever get to Clay City. All right, Pierre, come on, start moving. Come on. Yeah, that's it. Now, you too, Yvette. Both of you, come on.
Hey, what was that you called him, Hiram?
What's that?
Well, it sounded like Pierre.
Oh, sure. That's their name, Pierre and Yvette.
Oh, no.
Well, what's the matter? They're perfectly respectable names. I seen a show once in Denver called The Paris Review. That was the title of it, from Paris, France. And there was a couple of dancers. Well, sir, if they didn't put on a jig. I'm telling you, Britt, it sure was something. The fella, he just picked up this girl and he threw her every which way. I thought she was going to land right in my lap.
Oh, you did.
Yes, that's the truth, every word. And this here girl danced with him. She kept coming back for more, like she enjoyed being used for a lasso. Yes, Pierre and Yvette. That's what they was called. It was on a sign out in front of the Tabor Grand Opera House. Those names always kind of stuck with me. So when I bought these burrs, well... You know, bears, they ain't very particular about what you call them.
No.
Now, you just keep moving, Pierre. Come on, keep moving.
That's quite a load you're carrying there, Hiram.
It sure is.
Well, I guess I'll ride on, maybe see you in town, huh?
Hold up a minute, Brett. Ain't you going to ask me what's in them bags?
Well, no, I just figured it wasn't any of my business.
Well, I'm going to tell you anyhow.
Uh-huh.
If I don't tell somebody, I'll bust. Besides, I know I can trust you.
Hmm?
Hey, rope here. Whatever. Britt, I've struck it. I've made a strike the like of which I never even dreamed of.
Oh? Easy, Scott.
Look at now. You see this here sack right here?
Yeah.
This one right here? If it don't assay out to over $1,000...
$1,000?
That ain't the half of it. There's plenty more where this come from.
Well, that sure sounds good,
huh? It is good. Well, I just bet the vein I find delivers more gold in a year than they ever took out of California.
Is that so? Well, you sure are entitled to a strike, Hiram. You've been prospecting for quite a spell.
Yeah, huh? Sure have. 45 years, but
yeah.
45 years. Come with me. But I ain't got no regrets. Not now, I ain't. I told him in Clay City. I told him all there was gold in the Saucer Mountains. Oh, I could smell it. Just the way my burrs sniff water. But they wouldn't listen, no. They said old Hiram was touched, that I'd never find nothing but yellow-colored rocks. Yeah. Well, start singing a different song, man.
Oh, you're sure it's gold, you found.
Oh, you think I don't know it when I see it? You mark my words. Old Hiram has turned up the real thing. Of course, you mustn't let the news out.
Oh.
Not until after I get my assay report and file my claim.
Oh, sure.
But... I just wish there was some other assay office around here.
What's that?
Well, that Enoch Wilson. He would know a gold nugget from a tea kettle. And what's more, I don't trust him. I don't trust him a bit.
Well, no harm. You know,
some of the samples I brought him in before looked mighty good to me, but not to Enoch. I don't think he even tested them. Well, just let him try to say that this batch is worth it. Yeah, just let him try to say that.
No, what's the matter with Scar? He sure is restless.
Well, then you go on ahead, Britt. Just go on ahead.
I guess I might as well. Easy, boy. Easy. I hope everything works out the way you expect, Hiram.
Don't you worry yourself about that.
Nice run into you.
Mutual, Britt. Mutual. All righty, Dad. Come on. You can't eat that cactus. Get your nose out of there. I'll give you a taste of something worse than that.
Just going down when we got to Clay City. I figured on stopping at the hotel first, making sure of a bed, but Scar had other ideas. He headed right straight for the livery stable. There just wasn't any doubt about it. He'd remembered that filly. Yes, sir. And mind you, I'm not saying that a horse can really get a disappointed expression on his face, but I'll tell you this much. Scar gave a pretty good imitation of it when he saw a big roan stallion occupying what had been that filly's stall. Well, I left him there anyway, and I got myself supper in a room. And about 9 o'clock, I started feeling sleepy. You know. Oh, I just pulled off my boots. Yeah. Doggone, a man sure does get tired and stays up late. Holy smoke, what's that? Well, those shots right outside my window. I grabbed my gun and I... Oh, and then I saw I wouldn't be needing the gun. A couple of kids shooting off Chinese firecrackers. That's what I heard. Well, it didn't look like I was going to get much sleep that night. And the way things worked out, I sure didn't. Well, yeah? Who is it?
Hiram, Britt. I gotta talk to you. It's important.
Well, come on in.
Oh, thanks, Britt. Thank you.
What's the matter? What's the matter? You look like you're getting ready for a real hard winter. So.
Enoch Wilson. That's what's the matter. Remember, Britt, I told you I didn't trust him? Do you remember that when
yeah,
he said that?
Yeah.
That's what I got me some proof. What's in
there? It's just some firecrackers, Hiram. And Enoch, he says you haven't found gold.
No. He ain't said nothing one way or the other. But by the time I got the burrs into town tonight, it was almost 7 o'clock. Enoch was just closing up the assay office.
Uh-huh.
But I give him them sacks of gold, you see, and I said I wanted a report as soon as possible. And you know what he told me?
I can't say as I do, no.
Friday. He says I couldn't have no word because... He says I couldn't have no word before late Friday. Why, Britt, that's 2 days off.
Well, tomorrow being a holiday.
Well, that's the excuse he tried to hand me, too. Oh, that lying skunk.
Oh, you know, the 4th of July is a pretty important occasion.
Well, that don't give him the right to tell me a whole pack of lies, does it?
No.
Well, of course it doesn't. Anyhow, I had to leave my gold with him. I didn't have no choice. So I got me a bowl of Irish beef stew over at the O'Brien's Cafe, and then I went back to see about the Burroughs. And that's when I noticed the light in Enoch's office.
Oh?
So naturally, I was kind of suspicious, so I snuck up and I peeked through the window. You know what I saw, Brent?
I haven't the faintest idea.
He was sitting at the desk, Enoch himself, getting ready to do some assaying. And if those weren't my 3 sacks of gold in front of him, I'll...
Boy, we're just having a dandy of a show today, huh? All this... Whatever reason the CD player cut out. Let me see if I can cue this back up to approximately where we left off. You know, I apologize. If it's not one thing, it's another here this morning. I forget where we were at. Why it shut off. Had this problem before with a Shadow. Same disc player. But this is Hiram's Gold Strike. Its original air date was the 10th of January, 1954. I was going to play through the PSA on this one. 50 years ago today, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And the PSA on this, there's no advertising in the middle of the six shooter. It's usually some sort of a moral public service announcement. I played one in December that was about driving safely. Let's peek in and see where we're at.
End up the real thing. Of course, you mustn't let the news out.
Oh.
Not until after I get my assay report and file my claim.
Oh, sure.
But... I just wish there was some other assay office around here.
What's that?
Well, that Enoch Wilson. He would know a gold nugget from a tea kettle. And what's more...
I believe we're close. Let me just fast forward it a little bit more here. Sorry you have to listen to me. Whatever. I'll just go ahead and let it play. Sorry for all the troubles, folks. You're listening to WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour.
Just going down when we got to Clay City. I figured on stopping at the hotel first, making sure of a bed, but Scar had other ideas. He headed right straight for the livery stable. There just wasn't any doubt about it. He'd remembered that filly. Yes, sir. And mind you, I'm not saying that a horse can really get a disappointed expression on his face, but I'll tell you this much. Scar gave a pretty good imitation of it when he saw a big roan stallion occupying what had been that filly's stall. Well, I left him there anyway, and I got myself supper in a room. And about 9 o'clock, I started feeling sleepy. You know. Oh, I just pulled off my boots. Oh, yeah. Doggone, that man sure does get tired and stays up late. Holy smoke, what's that? Well, those shots right outside my window. I grabbed my gun and I... Oh, and then I saw I wouldn't be needing the gun. A couple of kids shooting off Chinese firecrackers. That's what I heard. well, it didn't look like I was going to get much sleep that night. And the way things worked out, I sure didn't. Well, yeah? Who is it?
Hiram, Britt. I got to talk to you. It's important.
Well, come on in.
Oh, thanks, Britt. Thank you.
What's the matter? You look like you're getting ready for a real hard winter.
Enoch Wilson. That's what's the matter. Remember, Britt, I told you I didn't trust him. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
I got me some proof. What's in
carnation? It's just some firecrackers, Hiram. And Enoch, he says you haven't found gold.
No. He said nothing one way or the other. But by the time I got the burrs into town tonight, it was almost 7 o'clock. Enoch was just closing up the assay office.
Uh-huh.
But I gave him them sacks of gold, you see, and I said I wanted a report as soon as possible. And you know what he told me?
Oh, I can't say as I do, no.
Friday. He says I couldn't have no word because... He says I couldn't have no word before late Friday. Why, Britt, that's 2 days off.
Well, tomorrow being a holiday.
Well, that's the excuse he tried to hand me to. Oh, that lying skunk.
Oh, no. You know, the 4th of July is a pretty important occasion.
Well, that don't give him the right to tell me a whole pack of lies, does it?
No, of course it doesn't.
Anyhow, I had to leave my gold with him. I didn't have no choice. So I got me a bowl of Irish beef stew over at the O'Brien's Cafe, and then I went back to see about the burros. And that's when I noticed the light in Enoch's office.
Oh?
Yeah. So naturally, I was kind of suspicious, so I snuck up and I peeked through the window. You know what I saw, Brad?
I haven't the faintest idea.
He was sitting at the desk, Enoch himself, getting ready to do some assaying. And if those weren't my 3 sacks of gold in front of him, I'll trade you a whole hog for a slice of bacon. That's what I'll do.
Well, supposing Enoch was testing your ore, that doesn't prove anything.
Don't you see, Brad? He's fixing to take my ore for himself. And once he makes up his mind how valuable it is, he'll do a little substituting. And I'll wind up with 3 bags of rocks when I come in to see him on Friday.
Oh, no.
Probably aims to find out where I got it to. Oh, yes. File the claim himself.
No, now that doesn't sound very
then
likely.
Then why did he say it'd be Friday before he'd know anything? Why'd he tell me that if he was planning to work tonight?
Well, if you're so upset about it, you should have just come right straight out and asked
him. I'm going to ask you, Britt. That's just what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask him. But I want you there when I confront him.
Me?
Enoch's already lied to me once today. But if you're with me, if he sees you're my friend, maybe he'll think twice before he tries anything funny. Yeah? Maybe I'll get a decent assay for a change.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand where I come in this.
Enoch knows you, don't he? Knows that you're the 6-shooter?
Well, we've met up a couple of times.
Yes, then. Well, come on then. But let's get over there while we can catch him red-handed.
Wait a minute. Now, hold on.
Brett! You know how much this strike means to me. You ain't gonna let anybody swindle me out of it.
No.
We ain't got all
night. All right. Just give me a chance to tuck in my shirt tail.
See the light, Britt? He's still here.
Now, you just remember one thing, Hiram. This wasn't my idea.
Sure.
Who is it? What do you want?
Hiram Garver. That's who it is. And Britt Ponsett with me, too. So you better get this door open.
Now, Hiram, you just remember.
Howdy, Britt. What's the trouble?
Well, I,
There you are, Britt. There, you see right there? See? Them are my sacks.
Of course they're your sacks, Hiram.
You see, he denied it, did he?
Hiram, are you going loco or something?
I'll do the asking, Enoch. You'll do the answering from now on. And you better not lie in front of Britt Ponsett, either.
Huh?
I thought you said you wasn't going to be able to assay this ore before Friday.
What if I did?
It appears like you changed your mind, don't it? Well, Britt wants to know the reason.
Well, it was just that you were kind of anxious, that's all. And your stuff did look a little more promising than usual.
Hey, what'd I tell you, Britt? Yeah, he knew it was good.
I said it looked promising, Hiram.
Promising enough so you try to cheat me out of it, eh? Well, you're not getting there with it, Enoch. The 6-shooter here will see to that.
Now, just hold on.
Hiram Grover, I ought to throw you right out of my office. If I was trying to cheat you, would I have sent word for you to stop in tomorrow morning before the parade and get your assay report?
You sent word?
You just asked Mike O'Brien, I was over at his cafe looking for you. You'd already left, though. I told him if he saw you, he'd give him the message.
You told Mike?
Well, Hiram?
Well, doggone it, but how was I to know?
You think he might have stumbled into something, Enoch? Real strike?
Well, ain't positive yet, Brett, but some of the samples are mighty encouraging. A couple more tests.
Evening, gentlemen.
Who are you?
Well, turn around. Just grab us some air. All three of them.
Well, now, you just wait a minute, Anna.
Do a little stretching before we... That's better.
It was real considerate of you to stay open tonight, mister. Saved us the trouble of breaking it.
All right, then. Let's start loading up.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. Our religious institutions are strongholds of the American way of life. Our country was founded by men who had faith in God and who were willing to endure hardship and sacrifice for the sake of that faith. Today, the religious institutions in your community need your interest and support, so take an active part in religious affairs. Your pastor, rabbi, or priest will give you invaluable family counsel and aid if you are a newcomer to the community. To face the problems of the future, America must be morally strong. And that moral strength comes through worship and faith. Go to church this week and take someone with you. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Levi's and leather jackets, both carrying 45s. They're about the same build, same color, and look enough like to be brothers. They hadn't bothered covering their faces. That meant that they weren't worrying about being recognized. Probably didn't come from Clay City. The tall one gave most of the orders.
Who's running this office? Well, somebody speak up.
I do the assaying.
That's more like it. And you'd be the fellow who'd know how to open this safe.
Well, ain't really nothing worth...
Cut out the stalling, mister. Get over here. Move!
Okay.
Enoch saw he didn't have much choice. So he bent down in front of the cast iron safe and started fiddling with the dial. The other outlaw, the short one, he was standing beside the desk. He reached out his free hand. He picked up one of Hiram's ore sacks.
I hear something, Len. Feels pretty heavy, too.
Can you let that alone, mister?
All right, take it easy.
That there all belongs to me. You ain't got no right to it.
Guess you don't hear so good. I told you to take it easy.
You think you can bully me just because you're holding a 45?
No harm.
Yeah, you've got another thing coming, young fella. I spent most of my life hunting that gold, and he ain't gonna walk in here and swipe it. You just let it be, or
The next thing I knew, Hiram gave a leap forward. I tried to stop him, but it was too late. For a second, he just kept on moving, a step or two. Then his legs buckled, and he grabbed the edge of the desk, but his fingers couldn't hold the grip. Both the outlaws were staring at Hiram. They weren't watching me. Get down, Enoch! My bullet hit the short one in the arm. The gun flew halfway across the office. And the other one spun around and knocked over the kerosene lamp. I got off a second shot. It was so dark, I wasn't sure I'd hit anything or not. For a couple of minutes, there wasn't a sound. Nothing but heavy breathing. I stretched out my hand and I felt a chair. I waited a second, and then I gave it a good hard push. He sure had good ears. The bullet splintered into the chair before it even toppled over. But the flash of his gun showed me where he was. Crouched right behind the safe, out of range. I edged over to the right. If I could just get past the window without him seeing me. I made a dive and fired.
Hey,
Enoch lit up another lamp. The boy that was shot in the arm, he hadn't passed out. He was just lying there, staring at me. Looking even younger than he had when he first came into the office. The other fella, he'd taken a bullet in the shoulder and he was bleeding pretty bad. But Hiram, he was worse off than either of them. He was flat on his back, gasping for breath. There was a big red splotch on his chest, and his mouth was covered with sort of a pink foam, like... It's a good thing Doc Nibble's house was in the next block. Well, Doc?
It's too early to tell anything yet, Bert. He had the bullet out, and he's still hemorrhaging.
I see.
Them other two, they'll be as good as ever in a week or so. Good enough for a hanging if Hiram don't pull through.
Oh, no, he's just got to pull through, Doc.
He's an old man, Bert. I've seen fellas a lot younger.
Yeah?
Well, you better get yourself some rest. It's almost 4 a.m.
Well, I thought maybe
there's nothing you can do here. Ain't a chance of him coming to before morning.
I was standing right beside him when it happened. I could have drawn, maybe, and then...
Maybe then you'd both be shut up. And I'll see you in the morning, Bridget.
Well, I went back to the hotel, but I just couldn't sleep. Around about 6:30, I gave up trying. I figured it was too soon to find out how Hiram was doing, so I went for a little walk around town. I wasn't very hungry, but as long as Mike's Cafe was open, I thought I just might as well stop in for a cup of coffee. I was just going through the door when Enoch Wilson came up running.
Brett!
Yeah? Yeah? Good morning, Enoch.
I was hoping I'd run into you. Stopped by the hotel, but they said you was out.
Yeah, I was sort of looking the town over.
I just left Hiram.
He's not...
No. It sure don't look good.
Oh?
Doc Nibble says he's got a good, strong constitution for a man his age. He'd have a pretty fair chance. But Hiram just don't seem to have any fight left in him. Ain't even trying to live.
Well, has he come to?
Yeah, about an hour ago. I happened to be there. You see, went back to the office after that gunfight last night and finished up Hiram's assay.
Oh?
Well, I thought maybe if it turned out to be something good, well, I wanted Hiram to know about it before he...
Oh, yeah, well, that was mighty thoughtful of you, Enoch.
Yeah, and it is good, Britt. Real strike.
Well, didn't you tell Hiram?
Oh, sure. Didn't seem to make no difference to him. He just nodded and sort of dozed off like he didn't even care.
Is that so?
And Doc don't understand it neither. He'd think, if anything, it'd make him want to live. Knowing he found gold sure turned the trick.
Yeah, you sure would.
Maybe he figures I'm lying to him because he's so bad off.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess it could be that.
Yeah. So we thought, Doc and me, we thought, maybe if he was to hear it from you, well...
Sure, Enoch. I'll go right over there, sure. Hiram, how you feeling?
Pretty good, Brad. Pretty good.
Oh, well, the doc says you're going to be all right real soon, too.
Yes.
Sure. Of course, you've got to help him along some, you know. He can't cure you single-handed, you know.
It don't matter, Brad. Just don't matter.
Oh, now, what are you talking about, Hiram? Well, I figured you'd be jumping up and down, fighting your way out of bed when you heard the news.
You mean about the gold?
Sure. Enoch said he told you.
He told me.
Well, you believe him, don't you, Hiram?
Well,
Why shouldn't I believe him? Well, I knew it was the real thing when I first found it. I knew it was real. Still, maybe that was the sign.
The sign? What?
That my life's over.
Well,
45 years I spent looking for that yellow stuff. Well, now I finally found it. I ain't got no reason to go on looking, no reason at all. I found it. I'm awful tired, Brad. I'm awful tired.
But you're going to be a rich man, Hiram.
Well, I wasn't hunting gold because it was making me rich, Brad. Oh, maybe when I was younger, that was the reason. But lately, these past few years, I just wanted to prove to folks that I knew what I was talking about. So, that I wasn't touched like they thought.
No, of course you are.
Nose or samples prove it, Brett, so it ain't gonna be too hard to die. Ain't gonna be hard at all. I've done what I set out to do, so I reckon I'm luckier than most men.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, I guess.
Yeah, this goes to show you, things work out for the best, Brett. For the best.
Yeah. Well, maybe Enoch did the right thing after all, so...
What's that?
Oh, nothing, Hiram, nothing. Now, you better get some rest.
She started to say something about Enoch.
Did I?
Yes, finish it up, Britt. What was that you were going to say?
What I was going to say. Well, now, you're a pretty sick man, Hiram. I wouldn't want to get you all upset.
Upset? What are you driving at, Britt?
Well, you're weak and feeble, and it wasn't my idea, of course.
Well, you don't mean that Enoch was lying to me that ore wasn't full of gold?
Now, I didn't say that.
I knew Enoch Wilson couldn't be trusted, so it's true about my strike.
So
they figured I was going to die, and then they'd all have the laugh on me. But I ain't going to be that obliging. I'll get well if it kills me. And I'll find gold, too, right out there in those mountains where I always said I'd find it. Oh, they think they're going to soft soap me into kicking the bucket, don't they? Oh, they do. Well, Britt, you just tell them different.
I'd be glad to, Hiram. I sure would be glad to. Well, by the time Hiram got well and found out he was responsible for a genuine gold rush, there just wasn't much he could do about it. And the way the money poured in, faster than Hiram could spend it, no matter how hard he tried. He sure went in for some fly-by-night schemes, too. Like that with that organizing a prospecting expedition to go up to Alaska, some place called the Pond, Klondike, I think it was, something like that. Everybody knew he'd never find gold up in a place like that, of course. They're all expecting him to come back any day now. Admit that it was just a wild goose chase. But he hasn't shown up last time I was through Clay City. Folks are beginning to wonder what's keeping him.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Herb Vigran, Bill Johnstone, Barney Phillips, Tony Barrett, and Howard McNear, who played Hiram. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking.
This is a firearm safety PSA.
No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule zero, all guns are always loaded. Rule one, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule two, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule three, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
WMFO Medford.
Okay. That was Hiram's Gold Rush, we heard. Original air date was the 10th of January, 1954. Again, I played through that PSA because it was just expressing for folks to go to church here in the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. Figured he was a reverend. Peanut butter and jams should be up next. I'm going to play out a request I got from Herkimer, Kansas. I believe it's kind of cold there this morning. So please play Manhattan, Kansas. It wasn't signed. And then I'm going to conclude with baseball, the first 100 years. I played this a month or so ago, narrated by James Stewart. Well, this portion is going to be narrated by Kirk Gowdy to celebrate the beginning of baseball season, which started 1 week ago, last week, tomorrow, I believe. Thanks.
Baby, if you've got no man to give it its last name. And my folks back in Manhattan didn't want me or my bundle, so I took my child and caught an evening train. I got a job in Denver washing dishes in a diner. At least it buys my baby milk to drink. He once told me I was pretty, but the only ring it got me was the ring of grease that runs around the sink. Yes, I lay beside him gentle, all he told me that he loved me, and he made me dance before the music played. But at least I didn't beg him, I'd rather wash my dishes. It makes me feel as if my hands are clean. At night I stand there thinking about the man back home in Kansas and how my folks just turned away the shame. I look down through the soap suds, reach down and pull the drain plug, and watch it as Manhattan drains away. Yes, I lay beside him gentle, 'cause he told me that he loved me, and he made me dance before the music played. But at least I didn't beg him, I'd rather wash my dishes. It makes me feel as if my hands are clean.
The Depression of the early 30s produced a new kind of baseball folk hero. The raw bone scrappers from the dirt farm, like Pepper Martin and a couple of brothers named Dean.
Well, dears, the pennant race will soon be on again. What do you think of our chances for the pennant next season?
Well, Dap, I think the St. Louis Cardinals will win the pennant again in 1935, and I'm hoping they do. And if you come through and I do, I think we'd be sure to win. Say, Dap, how's that old soup bone of yours feel this year?
It feels fine, Diaz. I hope that I can win 20, 25 games next year. How's that ham hock of yours feel?
Well, I hope that I can win 25 or 30 more games this year with that baby, and I think that I can squeeze 30 more games out of it this year.
The Gas House Gang. When they weren't running wild in the base paths, they were playing some pretty wild music, as their manager Frankie Frisch explains.
I had the good fortune to manage a terrific ball club. They managed themselves, if you know what I mean. I am possibly the only manager that carried an orchestra. We traveled with more instruments than we did shirts or anything else. And there is the placard as we got off the train. The Guest House Gang plays here today. A tremendous picture of the Mudcat Band. Down in the corner is a little picture of Medwick. Over there's a picture of mice. I walked in the ballpark, and here is a microphone and seven seats for my orchestra.
From 1929 through 31, the Yankees' murderer's row couldn't kill off Connie Mack's athletics. Simmons, Cochran, Fox, Dykes, Earnshaw, and Grove. Nor could they knock off Greenberg, Gehringer, Goose Goslin, and the Tigers of 34 and 35. But by 1936, manager Joe McCarthy had blended veterans and rookies to form another dynasty.
A ground ball to Gehrig. He scoops it up, touches the bag for the third out, and the 1936 World Series is over. The final score, Yankees, 13 runs, 17 hits, 2 errors. The Giants, 5 runs, 9 hits, 1 error.
Here's the stretch. The count is strike 2 and ball 1. There's a mighty smash into right center field. It's a base hit again. DiMaggio goes over, and his speed is to his advantage, and he holds that mighty blow to a single. Picks the ball up on the first hop. He went across after that ball. Boy, how he went across. That DiMaggio is a star in three very, very important ways. He can run like the devil. He can throw, and he can bat. And he's just a kid.
There's the pitch. A hard hit fly ball going far out into left field. Reynolds goes near it, and the ball is over the fence for a home run. Over the fence for a home run. Crosetti hitting a home run over the left center field fence, driving in Hoag ahead of him and putting the Yankees out in front by a score of 4-3. The first home run of the series. It's hit by Frankie Crosetti in the first half of the eighth inning. He drives in 2 runs, and the Yankees are out in front by a score of 4-3, as the complexion of the game has been completely changed.